Welcome to the special SearchSecurityChannel.com FAQ podcast. I'm Matt Donnelly, Associate Editor with TechTarget's Channel Media Group. My guest today is Chris Clements. Chris is a security architect for Flat Earth Networking, a dedicated information security company based in Nashville, Tennessee. He has experience in security systems, security policy, vulnerability assessment, and business case analysis. Today, Chris and I will be discussing the questions that VARs, consultants, and systems integrators often ask about network firewalls. Chris, welcome to the SearchSecurityChannel.com FAQ podcast.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay, well, let's jump right into the questions. The first question, vendors list never-ending feature sets for their network firewall products. What extras are worth VARs selling their clients?
So good question. Firewalls start out as relatively simple technology. Set network perimeters and basically said one IP address is capable of getting to another or it can't. We could set policy around that. Now, because of the optimal location at the network choke points and perimeters, as well as computing horsepower improvements, these also became advantageous places to put other feature sets. So what I'd like to discuss are some standard features that you should look at for in all vendor firewalls and sell your customers on, but also some of the new emerging feature sets that you can really take advantage of if the environment is right. So the standard features you should look for are, of course, access control, which is the base firewall functionality, but also things like address translation or being able to replace internal private IPs with external public IPs. Other things you should look for are authentication, being able to say some users can access, but some users cannot based upon their login credentials. Also in that is standard VPN functionality, being able to establish gateway-to-gateway VPNs using standard encryption algorithms such as DES, AES, or so forth. And the last of the standard features would be a remote access functionality, so users can install a VPN client at home and get a network connection encrypted like they would be normally in the office. Now, some of the new and some of the emerging features that we see being added into firewalls today are quality of service or network rate limiting, and that gives you the ability to say some traffic is more important than others and avoid network congestion. Also in that is IPS functionality, being able to really identify application-level attacks and block those specifically. Also some new functionality is SSL VPN. So remote users, instead of having to install a client on their PC, can now just open their web browser and establish a network-level VPN back to the main site. So very advantageous there. Some other things that have been added in are traditional antivirus scanning for network traffic and web filtering for blocking some undesirable websites. And really, what's going to determine whether you want to sell these to your customers or not is the value they can get from these added feature sets versus the performance they need from their gateway. Oftentimes, turning on a lot of these functions can really cause a tremendous performance hit in the gateway. So when you recommend these to your customers, which these are very useful options, you need to be careful that you're ensuring that the gateways that you're selling are capable of supporting them.
Mm. Now, if a customer has a large distributed network, should a VAR recommend a large centralized firewall at the core or maybe a smaller distributed firewall at each network?
Okay, good question again. The idea of the central versus distributed approach to firewalling a network really has to do a lot with whether the customer's network can support it and their planning philosophy. In a nutshell, a large centralized firewall is going to give them much more tight control over the network, but it's also going to take a lot more planning on the front end. There are advantages and disadvantages to both approaches, and the three main ones I'd like to touch on are performance, redundancy, and cost. From a performance standpoint, a large centralized firewall is typically going to have all the networks in an organization connecting through it. So we're very, very performance conscious to make sure that we're able to support all the traffic that can go through the network. With distributed firewalls, on the other hand, because each firewall is going to be on a different portion of the network, it's no longer necessary to be able to support sometimes multi-gigabit or 10 gigabit plus network traffic, so we can get away with smaller and cheaper devices at the distributed end. Another thing that we've got to worry about is redundancy. Obviously, if we've got all of our networks running through a large central firewall, if that firewall were to fail, then we've just taken down all of the business. So we've got to be very careful about that. And that can oftentimes mandate buying redundant systems able to take over in the event of a failure for a centralized system. You don't have that same concern with the distributed system, however, because each of the distributed firewalls, if they were to fail, would only affect that particular portion of the network. So there's kind of advantage there, too. However, on the cost, a large centralized system, having to be high-performance and highly redundant in the event of a failure, can be very expensive. And not only that, but that expense is often incurred on the front end. In other words, you can't do it incrementally. That firewall has to be purchased and purchased up front. So you've got to be careful there as well. Remote firewalls, by their very nature, distributed firewalls by their nature, are less expensive per unit than these centralized firewalls. But what you've got to be careful of scoping it there is the large number of distributed firewalls. The cost for that may in fact outweigh the cost of a large central system.
And how many firewalls can a reseller legitimately make a business case for?
The knee-jerk reaction for a firewall is to say, well, your firewall is something that protects the company from the internet. And that's true, and that's often companies' first concern. But when the FBI publishes their annual computer crime survey, the percentages they publish for successful attacks are weighted something in the order of 70 to 80% of coming from the internal network. So this really is concerning to us. And by placing additional firewalls in places companies might not traditionally think about internal to the network, in other words, they can really buy a lot of additional security advantage. The two main areas you should look for when you're looking to sell additional firewalls to your customers are network locations that contain high-value assets or servers. By being able to place access control around your high-value assets and servers, you can say, okay, there isn't really a need for you to connect to everything here, but we will let you connect to only that which is required for your job function. So you can buy a lot of advantage there.
Great.
The second area is network choke points. So where maybe remote networks connect into the main network, being able to set policy there as well and only allow access to what is necessary. And this can buy you the advantage of, say, a network worm outbreaks in a remote site. Having a firewall that protects your central site from the remote site can really mitigate the propagation of that worm.
Great. And what are unified threat management firewalls?
Unified Threat Management Devices, or UTM, this is kind of the new buzzword in the security market. And what it very simply means is the combination of many different security technologies into a single gateway or device. So where you would traditionally have a separate firewall system or a separate VPN system or antivirus scanner or IPS device, UTM devices combine all of these technologies together into a single device. And there's some very good advantages, but there's also some other things we need to watch out for when we recommend UTM devices. UTM devices are oftentimes considerably cheaper than doing point solutions for every given technology. But what you've got to watch out for is many times they're not what we would consider best of breed or the best solution for each given technology.
Great. Now, what are application layer protection technologies such as deep packet inspection or smart defense? When should VARs pitch those to a customer as a replacement, say, for an intrusion prevention system?
Cost. That's really the biggest advantage to these application layer protections that are being added into firewalls. Many firewalls today support taking packets apart and looking at content, looking for buffer overflows and other malicious attacks coming through that are targeting specific applications. Traditionally, firewalls look at only source of the communication and destination of communication. By being able to add this type of inspection, we can block a lot of the attacks that are causing us problems these days. However, I do not consider these a replacement for a pure-play IPS system. And the reason is purely focus. A company that makes an IPS system is going to be more focused on making that system higher performance and give you more information about it, where a firewall manufacturer is typically going to have this as an add-on.
Now, most firewalls have built-in VPN functionality. Is it a good idea to run both a VPN and a firewall on the same system? And if not, how does a VAR or a systems integrator make the case to their customer to have two separate devices?
Okay. Most firewalls today support VPN functionality in some way, shape, or form. Where you get in to the discussion of should I get a separate VPN system or should I leverage the firewall's capacity is going to be from performance and control. In large environments, we often have different groups managing the firewall access control portion and the VPN network encryption portion. So from that standpoint, if we have a customer with separate groups, then it makes a lot of sense to be able to offer different solutions to each group so that they can all remain autonomy and not have to worry about stepping on each other's toes. The other benefit it can add is performance. Because we're purpose-specking out the devices, we can have a firewall that only does firewall and a VPN that is only concerned with VPN traffic. So there's definitely a performance advantage there, too.
Mm. Now, what type of customer network could benefit from high availability and clustering?
The customer networks that can benefit the most for high availability or clustering in firewalls are networks that have mission-critical uptime. In other words, if we have any sort of downtime for that network link, that it causes significant disruption to our business process. So by utilizing systems that are capable of doing a failover transparently, in other words, one device fails and the other immediately takes over, or providing load balancing in the same function where we get a performance advantage as well, is very important. And so the areas you should look for are, of course, the internet connections, any sort of e-commerce connection, and any connection that serves services or provides services to your network population as a whole.
And when should a VAR recommend a firewall accelerated by application-specific integrated circuits?
So there's typically been a dichotomy in the firewall market between the software-based firewalls and the hardware or ASIC-based firewalls. An ASIC is a computer chip built to run a very specific function. So in other words, a firewall ASIC is going to be a computer chip built to be a firewall, whereas a software system is going to run on more general purpose hardware. Typically, software systems are more flexible and more configurable than ASICs, and ASICs are much faster than software systems. So the answer there is the performance needs. If we have an environment that really we don't think that it's going to be changing very much, it's not very dynamic, and requires a lot of horsepower, a lot of performance, then an ASIC system can make sense in that situation. But on the other hand, a very dynamic environment can benefit from some of the flexibility of a software-based system.
How can a VAR determine whether a firewall will handle their customer's network traffic?
So this is one of my biggest pet peeves. Typically, a firewall manufacturer will say, okay, this particular firewall model is capable of doing 500 megabits or 1 gigabit, and really, this doesn't often play up in practice. The reason is that a firewall is not making decisions, is not processing throughput. What it's doing is it's processing individual packets. And because packets can be different sizes, we can often have a big difference between the number of packets in a given bandwidth measurement. So if we say we've got 1 megabit of bandwidth, if this 1 megabit is composed of very small packets, then that's a whole lot more packets in that 1 megabit that we have to make the decision on. So what a firewall vendor will do is they'll say, okay, well, let's make this seem as fast as possible, and they'll rate it for the largest packet size possible. So oftentimes, you don't get a good real-world example by looking at the benchmarks. Typically, you should plan on anywhere between a 60 and an 80% performance hit from the best-case scenario a vendor can say, and the worst-case scenario.
And one last question. Network firewalls are a very mature technology. Is there really any difference in the capabilities of the various inspection technologies?
The history of firewalls started with packet filters. And packet filters were devices, typically access control lists on routers, that made decisions on very simple information. What's the source IP address? What's the destination IP address? And maybe what port or protocol is it using? But really not a whole lot else. From there, we moved on to a different technology called application layer gateway, sometimes referred to as proxy servers. And proxy servers took a different approach. Proxy servers would look at everything about a communication, from the source, the destination, but also the content of the conversation. So in other words, what files are you transferring, what content is in those files, and really being able to make advanced decisions upon that. So with these two technologies, what we had is we had a trade-off. The packet filters were very, very fast because they were only dealing with simple information, but by the same token, they weren't very secure because we couldn't make a whole lot of intelligent decisions. Proxy servers, on the other hand, were very secure because we could filter out just about anything about a conversation that we didn't like. But on the other hand, because we had to analyze everything about it, proxy servers were also typically very slow. So kind of a hybrid technology that was introduced is called stateful inspection. And stateful inspection gives you the benefits of the application layer inspection of a proxy with similar speed to a packet filter. Most firewalls today utilize stateful inspection, and this is pretty much the universal standard.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, for joining me on the SearchSecurityChannel.com Frequently Asked Questions podcast.
Thank you, Matt.
For an abridged version of this interview, visit SearchSecurityChannel.com/firewalls. And for more information on network firewalls and other security issues that matter to you and your channel business, please visit us online at SearchSecurityChannel.com. Thank you for downloading our podcast, and please join us again next time for more Frequently Asked Questions.